Well, hey, Virtual Sean. Hey, Virtual Laurel.
Hey, Virtual Friends.
Hey, Virtual Everybody.
So, obviously, we are podcasting remotely again, given the ongoing spread of the new coronavirus and recommendations about social distancing, but we're here together via the magic of technology, and we have a podcast to record. So, what are we going to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. How about an order handed down by Governor Evers' administration telling the people of Wisconsin to stay at home and closing a lot of businesses and leaving others open and everything everybody said about it?
I think that's a great thing to talk about. I would also really like to talk about the election and all of the chaos surrounding it, including four federal lawsuits challenging its existence, basically.
Well, those seem like important, substantive news stories to talk about, but let me remind you guys that usually we have some sort of quirky theme for each podcast episode, and I'm just not hearing a theme here.
Okay, John, you want a theme, huh? How about this?
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented times and things that happen in unprecedented times.
Works for me. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we talk about unprecedented times and the things that happen during them. So just before we get going here, a brief caveat about background noise on my end here. If you happen to hear a guy blowing leaves for some reason in the background, that's just happening. Can't really control it. My office faces out on the street, and you know, that's the thing that's happening right now. How are things going on in your necks of the woods?
You know, kind of weird. Yeah, just hanging out in the house a lot. Work is home, home is work. You guys get the drill.
John, did you just say your workspace is on the street?
Well, I have, yes, I'm out on the street.
I don't think that's, that seems very
my
rude.
My window faces the street.
All right.
Okay. And so I get street noise. You might hear some buses and cars driving by or some neighbors having conversations, hopefully from 6 feet away from each other. You know, or some birds or some dogs barking. You just don't know. We're working in real-world circumstances here. We're not cooped up in the pristine audio quality of a recording studio.
It's real. It's unplugged. Politics podcast unplugged.
Raw, unvarnished news content, bringing it straight to you. So where do we want to start? I mean, gosh, it's Friday now that we're recording. And earlier in the week, as Sean mentioned, the governor issued a stay-at-home order that took effect, Wednesday? He announced details of it Tuesday. And that feels like a really long time ago already.
It does. And I even think we should start a little bit sooner because the governor actually, I feel like the news started when he hinted, when he suggested that he was going to issue a stay-at-home order. Because it happened on his official Twitter account, and that was what we had there for a while, was that he was going to issue an order to stay at home, and we didn't really know what it meant at the time. I mean, in terms of details, what he said initially was that, like, sleepovers were going to be banned, stuff like that. So for a day, we were sort of left guessing as to what it would mean, but details came out the next day, and we learned that the order would cover a lot of people and a lot of things that, you know, were previously allowed. But to kind of oversimplify it, the entire order seemed like a list of essential businesses and activities and services. Essential meaning you're not covered by the order. And so it's kind of a big, it's urging the state of Wisconsin to stay home. There are things you cannot do anymore. But there are many, many, many things that you can do because they're considered essential.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, the order was kind of like a list of exemptions.
Yes.
And then, like, there were a couple things that weren't exemptions that were more like guidance on things that were banned that hadn't been specifically banned before. I'm thinking about, like, It mentioned team sports, like people wouldn't be able to play like basketball or ultimate frisbee. I think some people had fun with the fact that like it mentioned three sports and one was ultimate frisbee.
Right. And
appealing to that Madison demographic.
That's right. Actually, you know, so the exemptions did get a lot of attention for good reason, because that's a lot of what the order was. But there are things you can't do now. You can't go to playgrounds anymore, okay? And as a father of two young children, that hits home, man. And also, so there's a lot of places that are kind of fun that you can't go anymore. Amusement parks, carnivals, water parks. I'm not going to list everything. I know John likes the one Funplexes. Those are off limits now under stay at home.
Don't know what a Funplex is. I have no clue. I've never heard that term before.
Maybe it's you just wanted to have this umbrella term. Maybe the governor made it up. He's like, look, what's something we're not thinking of? How about, a Funplex. Put it in there. Put it in the document. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but we put it in quotes in our explainer on this order. But a lot of those places are banned. Team sports are banned. You can't have a crowd of 10 or larger at a wedding or a funeral or church, which they are specifically listed in the order. And then there are businesses that weren't listed in the order. And so you didn't notice them necessarily, but non-essential businesses have to close. So a clothing store, for example. Now, if you're a clothing store that sells essential stuff, so if you sell groceries, you can still sell clothes. Or if you sell telecommuting equipment, you can still sell clothes. Or if you sell alcohol, you could still sell clothes. But if you're just a clothing store, then you're closed under this order. If you're not touching on some of these other essential categories, as like clothing stores, bookstores, malls have to close, indoor malls. You know, there are places that are affected by this order, even though there are so many exemptions. But by and large, if you have anything to do with healthcare or food, you know, even a food cart, anything related to food, you know, you're open. And pretty much any manufacturing business, too, seems like is open.
Yeah, and businesses that supply, I think you mentioned this before, but things that people need to work from home, I think that can be so broad because people are obviously working from home for such a wide variety of industries right now. And like, what do you need to work from home? So that means like staples and stuff, I guess, stays open.
Yes.
No, you mean the brand staples. I thought you meant like you need staples to work at home.
No, not like bread, you know, like and Office Depot milk or something. No. Actually, yeah, the literal store staples.
Which could also be considered staples, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the general point that probably Tony Evers' administration would make was that, like, there are a lot of ways you can, like, fall down this rabbit hole and parse things, but the general message that we got from the governor and from public health officials this week was, like, if you don't need to be out or working, stay home. Stay away from other people. And there's just the fallout has come in trying to figure out who does need to be out, you know, who does need to be working, who does need to be providing services.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a tweet from a member of the governor's staff this week, basically saying like, hey, the point of this is to not find these exemptions and loopholes if it's not already like explicitly stated. The overarching theme here is that if you don't absolutely have to be outside of your home, you should not be outside of your home.
Yeah, you don't need like a permit or something to go for a drive to your essential workplace or for any reason for that matter. You can go outside your house. You're not going to get arrested for going outside your house. You're not going to get arrested for taking a drive. I went to a grocery store the other day. There were people out there. It was quieter, but not totally quiet. But yes, the whole idea is to sort of send a message to the public. It's just the document itself, if you really try to like boil down the document, it my head was hurting by the end of the day, trying to figure out what is and what isn't, and like what I wasn't imagining that might be banned but wasn't explicitly mentioned.
Yeah, you did a great Q&A of like things that people had asked our Wisconsin project about the stay-at-home order to kind of like try to parse it out a little bit more for people. And I think that was a thing on a lot of people's minds this week.
One thing that's interesting to me you touched on a little bit is enforcement of this order, and like who's it left up to enforce this, and what are the theoretical penalties for breaking this order?
The theoretical penalties, sorry, Laurel has done this story on, you know, the state's quarantine law before, so I'm sorry to cut you off there, Laurel, but I just noted that this was the first time that they issued one of these orders where they didn't just cite the statute where it talks about penalties for violating an order like this. They actually spelled out what those penalties could be. So they actually mentioned that people who violate it could face up to 30 days in jail or a fine up to $250. It's the first time I've seen that from one of the governor's order where he comes out and says it, like, look, you could go to jail for this order.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to note. So I did a story about 2 weeks ago, like Sean mentioned, about those quarantine laws. And those are specific laws for like people entering a quarantined area or leaving a quarantine when they know that they're sick. And the penalties under the governor's emergency order are different than those penalties. But they're definitely like, you know, they're talking about this enforcement. The administration says they hope they don't have to do this, but local law enforcement are completely empowered to, you know, give people tickets and cite people for not following this guidance.
And, you know, one common question that we got on Wisconsin, and shout out Wisconsin, because it was just really great to be able to see what the people were thinking and to be able to have kind of informed questions, you know. And one of the questions was about what if I'm a worker, I work at an essential business, but I'm afraid of going to work because I'm in a higher risk category. And so Governor Tony Evers was asked about that. He said that's a conversation with that business owner and that employee. In other words, there's nothing in his order that said that sort of protects that worker who is uncomfortable with going to work. So that's kind of the other side of this. You know, there is in theory a penalty for a person who goes out and plays frisbee golf or ultimate frisbee against this order, but there's really not a penalty for an employer who tells their employees, hey, get to work, this doesn't cover you.
So we've been hearing from, you know, members of our audience about this and their questions and their reactions and such. But then also there's this whole other category of, you know, other state politicians and officials and people out there reacting to what is policy being made by the governor and his administration. And I feel like that's another angle to this whole story this week. What have we seen, you know, in response to this order?
So my impression on Monday was that all this bipartisanship that we had seen was kind of over, because Republicans were unhappy with the governor on that day for hinting at this stay-at-home order, but not telling people what it was. You know, they said that was a bad move by the governor. He should be more clear. And I just figured, okay, that's it. They're going to start fighting again. This is sort of the politics that we know. But when Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald held a media call later in the week, I can tell you they were given repeated opportunities to criticize the substance of the order, and they did not do it, not at all. You know, they said, look, it's over. It's a done deal. It's not really worth talking about because the order was issued. So to me, they're actually, you know, on the surface, it might look like Republicans, oh, they're criticizing the governor again. This is partisan fighting. This is what always happens. To me, they are supporting the governor by kind of not saying anything. And they were also asked repeatedly, essentially, has the governor overstepped his bounds here? You know, because remember, Fitzgerald and Voss, a couple years ago, long before the coronavirus spread around the world, they had that lame duck session that took power away from the governor's office and gave to the legislature. And here is the governor exercising powers we kind of never thought possible in this emergency. They were asked, is that okay? Are you going to take any steps to rescind that power? And Voss, you know, Speaker Voss of all people, said on multiple occasions, you know, that's something we can look back on in the future. And we might say we made a lot of mistakes in all this, but now is not the time to have that debate. He said it a couple times. It was really striking to me. They are willing to give the governor kind of the leeway to do what he needs to do in this crisis, which, I mean, to me kind of tells me that they are, it sufficiently has their attention, right? They are concerned enough about what's happening with COVID-19 that they're willing to give the governor leeway to deal with it.
So that's Voss and Fitzgerald, the leadership there of the Republicans in Wisconsin, in the legislature. Have we heard any sort of different opinions out there, though?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from some rank and file Republican lawmakers are not happy with the governor's order. You know, you had Senator Devin Lemieux, a Republican from Oostburg. He said that Evers had used a sledgehammer rather than a scalpel to address COVID-19. Senator David Craig was more outspoken. He started circulating a bill that would give the legislature more checks over the governor's emergency powers. He said that, you know, Evers had exceeded his authority. And then if you look more broadly at how other conservatives have responded, not to Evers specifically, but to the government taking drastic measures. The Wisconsin Supreme Court over the weekend issued an order temporarily halting all jury trials until May. Justice Rebecca Bradley, one of the court's conservatives, issued quite a dissent in that one. She said, quote, if the people's constitutional rights may be suspended by the judicial branch in the name of a public health emergency, our freedom is in peril. Our republic is lost. I mean, yeah, she is not
a muted response.
Not at all. And that's just a little sample of what she wrote there. So not everybody's happy with the way things are going, because there is this trade-off between, you know, liberty and public safety. But the leaders are, I would say, muted on that right now. They're not looking to bring the legislature back in to stop Tony Evers.
So before we move on from talking about the leaders, though, and start talking about the election on April 7th, I want to just touch on a little bit what the leaders had to say about coming back in and voting on any bills or taking any action related to the coronavirus pandemic, because them, it turns out, coming back and voting on stuff is pretty essential if any changes are going to be made to the April 7th election. Basically, it would take either an act of the legislature or the courts to change the date of the election, which is something people have been talking about a lot, or other election-related laws in Wisconsin, obviously. So, Sean, you covered the leaders' press conference. What exactly did they say about coming back in?
Well, they're not going to do it for the election. This is another one where a lot of people keep asking, what's going to happen with this election? I think, you know, maybe there's this idea out there that this is another one of those partisan issues. Not with leadership. Voss and Fitzgerald both say Evers is doing the right thing with moving ahead with this election. So you have the governor and his two Republican adversaries in the legislature all firmly on the same page. Firmly on a page? I don't know if that works, but you know what I mean? They all agree on that. And as far as coming back in, they're, you know, they're a little bit more flexible on what might happen there. They have to, you know, the changes that are being made in Washington now are so massive There, it looks like the House will eventually, maybe by the time we've put out this podcast, maybe not, but, you know, the Senate passed a $2 trillion economic stimulus plan, 96 to nothing, you know? And that includes massive changes for workers and for state governments. And it's probably not the last bill they're going to pass. So in a way, state government needs to see where it can fill in those gaps. And right now, they're not like rushing out to say, here's our list of things to do. The, you know, Voss and Fitzgerald are not anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to note before we move on that I am currently breaking a podcast rule. We have unique recording circumstances right now, but I have been looking at Twitter as we've been recording,
Laurel,
which is normally
who is
taboo.
Surprised?
I know.
Wait, is that a podcast rule?
I think it's like an informal rule that we're not supposed to be like distracted while we're recording the pod.
You're always looking at your phone and stuff.
Oh, I see Governor Tony Evers.
Yeah.
Sorry. I started playing his audio. My bad.
His video?
Go ahead.
I even discreetly tweeted while Sean was talking about the Supreme Court.
Man.
But basically the governor is calling on the legislature to come in and take action to send every registered voter in Wisconsin a mail-in ballot for the election. So while the governor and lawmakers leaders agree that the date of the election shouldn't be changed, so the legislature doesn't need to come in to act on that, looks like he's asking them to come in and act on something else related to the election. So we'll have to see what leaders have to say about that.
They don't agree with him on that one. You know, they're not on the same page as far as mail-in ballots to everybody. They haven't had a chance to react to this order yet as we're recording, but that was something that they were kind of asked about earlier this week, and they were not there.
That's right. Senator Fitzgerald said that, this is coming back to me now, he said that if they were going to move to an all mail-in election, that was something that they would have needed to do like a while ago, just so they had enough time to educate voters about it and tell people that was the way the election was going to be conducted this time. So that call by the governor not looking too promising, probably. Look, real-time news and analysis on the podcast. Real-time for us, anyway.
Kind of helpful, actually. Yeah. Just, you know, that was enough, Laurel. You've had a little break. I'm sure no more news will happen while we're recording the podcast.
No.
Nothing at all. And if it does, we can throw it to Future John, our good friend Future John, for an update on everything that happened between now and when we release this podcast. Future John?
From the future, I'm Future John. After the governor called for an all-mail-in election, Republican leaders were quick to dismiss the idea. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald called the proposal a complete fantasy and a hoax. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said Evers' quote, last-minute scheme of a mail-in ballot election is logistically impossible and incredibly flawed. Now back to Sean, John, and Laurel in the recent past.
Thank you, Future John. You are a voice of calm and comfort and reason in these troubled times.
Such knowledge he has, yes.
The power is staggering. If only me, regular time John, could match Future John.
Future John, why didn't you tell us about all this stuff that was going to happen to us? It's very troubling. I would have liked to have known about it and bought more, hand sanitizer or flour or something.
That's just not how the rules work.
I understand.
Anyway, so, notwithstanding those possible updates from Future John, there has been a lot of other news related to the election this week, and litigation related to the election and calls to postpone the election and a whole bunch of stuff that I can't even keep track of. But Laurel, you especially have been writing about what's been going on about that stuff.
Well, I feel like I've been guarding this like election story sort of like a dragon over her eggs or something, because I just find it's been so interesting to me. But it is a really interesting story, because obviously nothing like this has ever happened before, and clerks are trying to figure things out and voters are trying to figure things out. And so it's just a really unique time for democracy, really, in the state of Wisconsin. So where we're at right now, at the time of this recording, is that we have 4 federal lawsuits filed that have to do with Wisconsin's April 7th election and whether it should happen on April 7th, or whether certain election laws should still be in effect during the pandemic, basically, whether or not those laws are too burdensome for people under these unique circumstances. But I feel like I'm actually getting sort of like shades of the voter ID lawsuits and like how they overlap with each other and how they have slightly different arguments from different groups filing the lawsuits and just kind of keeping track of all of them. That's a little bit how I felt this week. So I guess I can just kind of go through them really quickly, and I'll try not to lose people because I know that this could be, unless you're dragon-like like me, and very into this.
Do you know that my... John and I took one of your eggs last week. We covered a court ruling. Did you notice that?
That's true.
We got an egg.
That's true.
We made an omelet out of it.
You guys do have one of my eggs. That's true. Because it was like, it was
an extension
Friday.
Of the online voter registration egg. Extended it till March 30th, Friday night, Sean John special. Boom.
I was on a Zoom call with like all my girlfriends from high school and missed the, I was distracted and let one of my eggs go. but yeah, that was the first lawsuit, and the only one that's had a ruling so far, actually, that's from the State Democratic Party and the Democratic National Committee, and it talked about online voter registration, which the judge ruled should be extended, and some other deadlines, like the deadline for returning those mail-in ballots and things like that. The judge passed on making any of the other changes that were outlined in the lawsuit, at least as of right now. He could issue another ruling. The other lawsuits, one is from the city of Green Bay that's basically just citing health concerns for voters and election workers moving forward with the election. There is a lawsuit from the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin that talks very specifically about a requirement for absentee mail-in ballots to have a witness signature on them. They say that getting those signatures for people that are isolating at home during the pandemic, that's too difficult for them to try to figure out how to get somebody and to be in contact with somebody to sign that. And then the last lawsuit, which was just filed last night, is a lawsuit from a really broad coalition of groups, but 3 of them in particular work with minority communities in Wisconsin. One is Souls to the Polls, which works with Black voters. Then there's Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, sometimes called BLOC. They work primarily in Milwaukee, I think. And then Voces de la Frontera, which is a statewide organization that works with Latino voters. And basically their argument in their lawsuit is that minority communities have special challenges trying to vote by mail or do the online things that they need to request the mail-in ballot or to register to vote online if they're not already registered to vote because of not having internet access, not having that resource readily available to them. So that's a rundown on all 4 cases right now. There could be more coming. And of course, we're waiting for rulings to come down basically any time to see what they have to say.
Future John could pop in again, you know.
John, if you're there, what happened with the courts?
Friday night, a federal judge dismissed one of the lawsuits filed by the city of Green Bay seeking to postpone the election. He said the city did not have standing to bring the case, but another lawsuit also looking to delay the election remains active. Meanwhile, the state Republican Party filed a request with the Wisconsin Supreme Court looking to stop clerks in Milwaukee and Dane counties from letting voters say they are, quote, indefinitely confined to avoid photo ID requirements. The state GOP wants the state Supreme Court to hear the case directly.
Oh, thanks, Future John. You've saved us once again. We really appreciate it. Future John, I'm just glad knowing there's a future. it feels weird sometimes. It's good to know that, that things are still happening at a time, not now.
So that's sort of the nitty-gritty about the specific lawsuits and some of the back and forth about whether or not to postpone or move ahead. But just more broadly, can we look again at sort of what's at stake in this election and whether or not it happens on time? I mean, what are the political implications here?
Yeah, so that's obviously something people are talking about a lot. The big marquee thing on the ballot, obviously, is the presidential primary, the Democratic presidential primary. The status of that race is a lot more wrapped up than I think a lot of people thought it would be by the time April 7th rolled around in Wisconsin. So I think the importance of Wisconsin weighing in that particular race is maybe not as much as folks thought it might be. Aside from that, there's the state Supreme Court race. A 10-year term on the Wisconsin Supreme Court is a really huge deal. That office, though, the person that is elected isn't slated to take the bench until August. So the election being pushed back wouldn't necessarily affect that the functioning of the court in that way very much. Where people are a little bit more concerned are the really large number of local races that are on ballots across the state. So there are mayor's offices on the ballot, there are county executive races on the ballot, and it really varies between local governments whether or not there are rules on the books there for how an office would be filled or continue to be occupied if an election were to be postponed. So some places have language that specifies that the incumbent just stays in and continues doing their mm-hmm. job, but other places don't have that. And so people are raising concerns about, you know, if we don't have races to fill these seats, does the person currently there just stay? And is that legal? And how does that work? Are these offices going to be vacant? And so it's a really sort of patchwork of regulation across the state of how that would work. And a lot of people are really concerned about it.
And I think there's this outstanding political question, too, that we don't know. We know that people are requesting absentee ballots in record numbers. We don't know which party that's going to benefit exactly. I mean, we see both parties organizing. We see big numbers of requests for ballots coming in from Dane County, Milwaukee County, you know, strong Democratic counties. I was just noticing in the ballots returned, though, which county has a surge of ballots returned? Waukesha County is returning those ballots in this initial, we can still call it, I hear a train in one of your homes. I think that's
yeah,
John's.
Yeah, that's me.
John, out in the street, John. No, but I mean, it's organizing this as a voter turnout operation is really just different than anything we've ever experienced. And so it's one thing to get people to go to myvote.wi.gov and request an absentee ballot, but people got to get them back too. And, I don't know what to read into it. That all of the groups that are filing this lawsuit are affiliated with Democrats and the ones fighting these lawsuits are Republicans. Is that, is it that just because of their views of the fairness of the laws, or is there a strategic disadvantage that Democrats feel like they're seeing out there under these restrictions that we're under because of COVID-19?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have this theme over time of Democrats wanting to make it easier to vote and lift any restrictions and kind of broaden that out. And these lawsuits fit in with that. And Republicans wanting to do things like voter ID that kind of they argue they make elections more secure and have things like that. So it could just be a continuation of that theme that we've seen for a long time. And that's why Democrats are pushing these lawsuits about the election. Or it could be that they feel like people who tend to vote for Democrats are going to be really hurt by, you know, a push for voting by mail specifically. So it's, and we really won't know the answer to that until after the election, I guess, if this moves forward, and people need to vote mostly by mail.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. In these unprecedented times, things happen during unprecedented times, and we'll be here to talk about it. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
These times are certainly unprecedented, but one precedent you can count on is that you'll get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single week when you subscribe to the show. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And while you're there, you can leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. If you have some extra time on your hands, why not catch up on past episodes of the show? You can listen to all of our old episodes anytime you like by going to wpr.org/politics.